Hello, and welcome to episode 39 of the Tempcast. Unfortunately, absolutely no news happened this week, so I think we should just talk about a video game that I have yet to play. So, what we're going to do is have our good friend, Jordan.
Hi.
Speak with my other good friend, Steven.
Hey there.
And they're going to talk about Resident Evil Village. And I'm going to sit here and look pretty and chime in every once in a while.
To be fair, if we would have tried to do this on a game you've played, we'd be limited to all of the Kingdom Hearts games and nothing else.
Yeah, pretty much. We could talk about Kingdom Hearts.
I think I'm good.
Sure, we have time. We started a little early because Steven's got to go, so we have some time to talk about Kingdom Hearts.
Oh yeah, after I go, if you guys want to do like another 3-4 hours on Kingdom Hearts, I'm okay with that.
Why are you volunteering me for this?
I'm gonna explain the story. So you got to start with Kingdom Hearts 1. You don't start with Birth by Sleep like they say you should. You always got to start in release order.
Speaking of which, you finished. You finished Village like an hour ago. How'd you like it?
I finished Village, about a half hour ago. I stayed up all night playing it and then still had to only sleep 4 hours and get up early to finish it. But I did finish Resident Evil Village and you reviewed it for us, right?
I sure did.
All right, let's start with you because I know you're a huge Resident Evil fan.
Yeah, so in my official GBA temp review, I gave Village a 9 because I think it hits exactly what I wanted in a continuation from 7 and only stumbles on a few parts. Let's just address the elephant in the room. This is Resident Evil 4.
Yeah.
Not even pretend that it's not. It's, you know, the rural European setting, merchant comes back. We've got, a castle and an industrial area. To be fair, industrial areas are in basically every Resident Evil game. But this one felt very reminiscent of the island from Resident Evil 4, just with the kind of grungy aesthetic that it went for.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, should we mention spoilers galore for this podcast?
Well, I think let's start off not doing spoilers. Let's give our broad thoughts and then zero in a little.
Fair enough. I think that it hits exactly what I wanted in a continuation from 7, with a few points that I wasn't a fan of. This is a very cinematic game, and I kind of liked how 7 kept the cinematics light in favor of just doing things in the moment so as not to pull control away from you, which I think that was mostly done for the VR conversion more than anything, but it still worked in the non-VR gameplay. And then just straight up, we're back to being an action shooter, which, I mean, my favorite game in the franchise could also be described as an action shooter. So I guess that's not the worst thing in the world. But I did like 7's change to emphasis on actual horror with a little bit of that B-movie style writing as opposed to the light horror with the campiness.
Yeah, it didn't really indulge in the campiness of 4 much, really.
No.
Which I was surprised by.
There's parts. There's some parts that do, but pretty light overall.
I mean, the villains are really the only thing I would say, right? Like,
and even then, only, like, 2 villains.
Yeah, so here's the thing. It's hard to define where this fits into the Resident Evil franchise, because Resident Evil is, I think you said in your review that it's all about change, specifically.
Yeah, you know, maybe it's a stretch, but considering that the premise of the entire franchise is humans changing into bioorganic weapons, often against their will, I feel like change has always been at the core of this franchise, and that's reflected in the ever-changing style of the games.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that's what makes it so hard to define this one, because I don't see it really as a continuation of 7 because it has the same first-person style, but almost everything else is different. Like, it's tonally so different. It doesn't really feel like it's even trying to be scary, which I'm not saying is a bad thing. I thought 7 was really creepy and, like, genuinely scary at parts, but I didn't mind that this went a different way with it. I thought it was a lot lighter and kind of fun, and it reinvents itself as much as 4 did, really, just without changing the perspective.
Right.
Because, I mean, 7 was so reminiscent of the first one, which, you know, they reflected, they called it Resident Evil Biohazard, and they called it Biohazard Resident Evil in Japan.
Yep.
And this one basically felt like it was doing the same thing, right? Like,
yeah, to an extent. That is something I didn't really talk about in the review, but I loved in 7 How it seemed like a love letter to all these different types of horror films.
Yeah.
Where in the Baker House you have, you know, your classic slasher. In the beginning with Mia, you have like the Evil Dead style possession. Marguerite's portion, you have like body horror, and then you get to Lucas and it's just Saw.
Yeah.
So before I actually really dove into Village, I was kind of hoping that they do the same type of thing, but with more classic, like the old school Hammer horror films, especially with, oh, we've got a vampire in a castle and the main villains are werewolves. I thought it would have been cool to see some more of that classic representation, which we get a little bit of, but it wasn't played into nearly as heavily as Seven did with the more modern horror films.
No, not at all. It really just does its own thing. I think what's going to hurt this game for a lot of people is expecting it to be more like Seven, which isn't right. Wrong of them, because it's the same characters. It's a direct continuation of the story.
Right. And on that note, I kind of struggled with what to rank this game in a numeric score. Personally, I'm not a huge fan of numeric scores. I think it can mostly just be boiled down to either really liked it, indifferent, or didn't really like it. But our good buddy Eric Zander inspired me to judge the game on its own merits and not just what I wish it did. And on its own merits, I think it's near perfect. Fantastic gameplay. Surface level, really good graphic. You know, you look at the environments and you still have some of the lower quality rendering from 7, but just super fun. And I'm happy with this direction for the series.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people have criticized the length of it. I actually think I really loved the pacing of it.
Yeah.
It moves quickly. You're never bogged down with stuff. Even 7, which was probably about the same length of this, I felt like dragged a little near the end because it just was paced so much slower, which makes sense for a horror game, but... Mm-hmm. I really loved that about it, and I know Resident Evil always gets flack for the length, and I understand it to an extent when you drop a bunch of money on a game and you're finished in 2 days, but just for the overall quality of the game, I think it works really, really well.
Absolutely, I think the...
Oh, wait, hold on. Whoa. Eric was going to say something. We should let him, because he's not going to get to do much.
We should.
Does the length of Resident Evil games in general get flack, or just, like, the more modern ones? Because, I mean, I don't know. I know that, like, one in...
Yeah, you're probably right, because I know the remake of 3 did, and I think 7 and 8 definitely have, so... Well, yeah, I think the old school ones.
Yeah, the old school ones especially, because, like, a lot of it's, like, puzzles and figuring out what you're supposed to do, so a lot of it's just running around with not knowing what's going on. Or at least it is for me. But yeah,
no, most of that game is running around and trying to figure out obtuse weird puzzles.
Yeah, so you said that you liked the length of this, but you didn't just rush through the story like a bunch of other people, right? Like, how long do you think it took you versus how long it would take somebody who's just trying to finish it?
It took... I was playing pretty slowly and doing a lot of exploration. I really only kind of rushed for the last area. It took me, I think, about 7.5 or 8 hours.
Okay.
I can actually load up my save and check real quick, but how long did it take you, Jordan?
It took me about 10 hours and like 20-odd minutes, and that's including... I hunted down every beast. I went for every marked treasure that the Duke puts on your map. I explored most of the rooms. Some of them I just got kind of fed up where it's like, oh, I don't have a lockpick right now. Well, maybe I'll come back, and then I never came back. But I ended up trying to do as much of everything as I could.
Yeah, I did the same thing. So I just loaded up my save. My time was 8 hours and 5 minutes.
Nice.
But yeah, I did basically the same thing. I got every treasure except one.
Yep.
And I killed every beast. I made almost all the food. I mean, I'm sure I missed a few. I got everyone I could find.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. So it isn't that long of a game.
No. But much like 3 and 7, this game's lasting appeal comes from its replayability, where there's challenges to complete. You go back, you replay the game, you beat those challenges, and then you unlock the ability to do the infinite ammo for each gun as you upgrade them completely.
I just looked the game up on PSN profiles to see what the fastest, like, 100% completion is.
Yeah.
What do you guys think is, at least according to this website, the record for the fastest from earning the first trophy to earning the platinum?
Oh, gosh.
If you play it on a separate profile, you can definitely speedrun it right afterwards. I'm going to say it's, like, under 15 hours.
It is under 15.
I am going to say 6 hours.
It's 7 hours and 23 minutes.
I was close.
Holy
yeah, the person at number 2 was 10 hours, then 16 hours. So So two of them are above what Jordan said and below what Steven said.
Jesus. Yeah, that's pretty bad, actually. Yeah, if you can run through 100% it that quickly.
There's an achievement to beat the story mode in under 3 hours.
Yeah, which I'm not really surprised by.
No, because 7 did the same thing, except under 4 hours, but I beat it in under 3 hours when I did my run.
Yeah, because especially once you do one run, you can, you know, you get infinite ammo, weapons, and stuff like that, like you said, and you can just run through again.
Yeah, what do you guys feel about speedrunning trophies like that, where you got to beat, like, a game in a certain amount of time?
I mean, if it's a good game, I'm okay with it. I was okay with it for 7, and I'm going to be okay for it with Village.
So the first game that got me addicted to trophies was actually Uncharted 1, and there was a trophy for beating it within a certain amount of time, and that just, I was like, this is so great, because I just played like this really, 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 really hard and long game, at least it was for me, and now I'm just rushing through it. It's awesome. And then I had to do it with Kingdom Hearts, and then I felt bad.
Yeah.
I like doing it with Resident Evil, because like it usually takes, you know, 7 or 8 hours for the last couple to run through slowly, and you're exploring and taking your time with the puzzles and getting into the story and finding all the collectibles. So it is kind of fun then to just turn around and try to blaze through it as fast as you can, and it just kind of makes you see the whole game in a different way. So I don't know, I don't mind trophies like that, but I guess I do have a little bit of an issue with games that get a lot of their length from replays, because I think there are a decent number of people that are in there for the story, that are in there for seeing the scares or the new environments or whatever. It's probably less of an issue with this game, where it does feel like it leans on its gameplay more than its atmosphere, like 7 did. But like, I generally don't replay games. I'm not a fan of having to go back and do that. So
yeah, and that's just the thing. If you're here to play it once, get the story, move on with your life, then yeah, $60 is too much. But you can't say that the game doesn't give you things to do after that first pass. That's just your preference at that point.
Yeah, definitely. There is something I want to ask you about. You said, we were talking offline, that you still liked 7 better than this game.
Yes, so I like the atmosphere and story of 7 better than Village, but with the visual upgrades, the gameplay upgrades, the added content for post-game that isn't just go back and replay the story for the umpteenth time, I think Village is objectively the better game. I just prefer 7.
So what are the gameplay upgrades that you're talking about in that sense?
Combat's more refined. It was a bit more sluggish in 7, which can actually be explained with the story when Ethan mentions that Redfield gave him military training.
Yeah.
I like that the Lycans actually fight back, where it feels like the Molded just spent most of their time stumbling, which definitely was reminiscent of the original zombies in the original trilogy of games, but even then I felt like they were a little more of a threat than the Molded were, because as long as you block in 7, the Molded can't really touch you. And that could be said here too. There was plenty of times where blocking saved my butt.
Yeah, that's interesting. See, I don't know how I feel about that, because I do feel like comparing the two games are kind of like comparing apples and oranges, like, because I feel like that less refined combat suits the horror style of 7 a lot more.
It does.
And, like, the inventory is a lot better here, the map is a lot better here, but, again, I feel like all those things are playing to 7's advantage.
They are, and I mentioned that in my review as well, that, like, from a quality of life and gameplay standpoint, moving crafting to its own menu and going back to the attach case style, it's great. But 7 made me manage my resources and told me, no, I can't take all my guns with me at once.
Yeah, exactly.
And that was more conducive to a horror game. I mentioned that in my review. So, but for the game that Village is, that works. And yes, I would have preferred if I wasn't constantly handed bullets to the point where I never really felt like I was at risk of running out.
It's insane. I was walking around with like 120 handgun bullets. Yeah. Like,
you either find more than enough or you find the components to craft more when you do run out.
I don't think I ever crafted handgun bullets.
Really?
I don't think I ever did. Like, I definitely did shotgun rounds, but like, it just constantly, I would find boxes of like 20 and 30. It's insane. Yeah.
I crafted handgun bullets at the beginning, and then about after the castle is when I started focusing all of my crafting on shotgun shells, magnum ammo, the explosive rounds for the grenade launcher.
Did you guys play on different difficulties?
No, I think we both played on standard, and then I started a hardcore playthrough almost immediately after. I almost wish I would have started on hardcore, though, because standard was kind of easy.
Yeah, that's another huge complaint about this game. And yeah, I definitely get that. Again, where there's so much more of an action game, just breezing through all the enemies is kind of an issue. So that's probably something I would tell people is to play on hardcore.
Yep.
And I think that's generally the consensus among people, right?
Yeah.
I've been trying not to look too much because, like I said, I only finished the game a half hour ago, but I've heard a few people say that.
Yep. Our own fellow reviewer, Tom Bombadildo, he played the game first time on hardcore, and he did just fine. He beat the game in like 6 hours.
Yeah.
So I wish I would have done hardcore, but I was also trying to get a timely review, so I didn't want to risk it being, you know, a properly scaled challenge.
Yeah. So we've been comparing it to 7 a lot, and I think, like I said, that's a little bit of apples and oranges to me. I think the more appropriate comparison is 4. How do you think this game stacks up against Resident Evil 4?
I think it's very, very clearly inspired by, but I do think with the treasure hunting map, the addition of the cooking and just the general story itself, not to mention the gameplay of an action shooter in first person as opposed to an action shooter in third person with tanky controls, I feel like Village does enough to stand apart from 4, but you still look at the game and say, oh, this is Resident Evil 4 again.
Which one do you like better? What, like, do you think that's a fair comparison on a quality level? Are they similar enough in that sense?
I don't. I think it's actually more of an unfair comparison from 7 to Village.
Really?
Because Resident Evil 4 has not aged very well. It is still my favorite in the, franchise. But the last time I tried playing it, I'm like, no. I don't want to play.
Really?
I don't want tank controls on WASD. It's...
I agree on a keyboard, but I played it recently with a controller. I only played about an hour and a half, but I thought it held up pretty well, actually.
Yeah, I remember when I reviewed it, the PS4 port, which was the last time I played it with a controller. I didn't have a problem with it then. It was when I bought it on Steam and tried playing it keyboard and mouse that I realized, oh, wow, this is showing its age.
I don't know. I feel like playing both with a controller, it felt like a fair comparison to me. I don't think 4 has aged that poorly, honestly.
That's fair. I didn't play Village with a controller either. It's a shooter.
Oh, really?
So I played keyboard and mouse.
Yeah, I'm a pleb. I played on PC with a controller.
Oh, gotcha.
Just to go out of my way to get the worst of every world.
That's fair. That is fair.
I was going to say, it does feel like... I wish I could compare it more because I haven't played 4 in so long. I've played the game 2 or maybe 3 times, but it's been a few years since the last time I played it. But I think I might like this better than 4, honestly, just because of the pacing. There are some parts of 4 that really drag. It gets really heavy with dialogue. You have these like Metal Gear Solid style codec calls with people that tend to drag a lot. I love the cheesy, campy style of 4, and I missed that here, but just for being like a brisk action shooter, I don't know. I really think I might like this better.
That's totally fair. I'm not going to tell you you're wrong for that.
I am. No, I'm just kidding.
I know. We need an argument here,
come
dude.
On. Come on, Eric.
This show thrives on arguments.
Resident Evil 4 is the greatest game of all time, and by even trying to say that it is, pales in comparison to a modern video game such as Resident Evil 8 Village makes you... a hypocrite.
Oh, okay. Good point.
That's fair. You got me, Eric. All right, I'm back on your side.
I will say, this game did make me want to go back and play the Wii port of Resident Evil 4 again.
It's the only way to play that game.
Yeah.
The Wii port will never age poorly.
No, the Wii port with the Wiimote pointer controls, just top tier.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to try play it with the Wii Zapper for the first time and see if the QuickTime events mess with anything with that.
You should you should play it with the tank controls with the DDR mat.
Oh, yeah, okay. What I should do is track down the chainsaw controller and play it that way.
Chainsaw controller?
What's that?
Did you not know that?
No.
There was a PS2 special edition of the game when the game stopped being a GameCube exclusive that came with a PS2 controller in the shape of a chainsaw.
Dang.
You That's never awesome. Knew about this.
No, I've never heard of it.
Never heard of that before.
I will send you some videos after the podcast. It's something.
It sounds amazing.
Yeah, I never had a PS2, so I never got to play that version. But
wait, you never had a PS2?
Nope.
What? How is this a real controller? Are you sure this was a PS2 one? Because the buttons are kind of laid out like a GameCube.
Guys, we're missing the point that Jordan never had a PS2.
Yeah, I didn't.
Yeah, everyone else had it. You don't need it.
Oh, there was a GameCube version of it that I just never got. Interesting. I only knew of it from the special edition PS2 port.
That didn't make you go out and get a PS2 on the spot?
Nope. Sure didn't.
He was just a little baby. Oh, you know what? Now that I think about it, I got a PS2 the same month that the PS3 was released. So, I was like, thanks.
So you were a little behind the ball, too.
Yeah.
I think the only PS2 I had for the longest time was, like, my mom's friend, her kid had one, and I think he was being punished, and she, like, took away his PS2 for a week and gave it to my mom, and I got to play on it. I vaguely remember something like that happening.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that was the best. It was the best week ever.
Did you have a PS1, Jordan?
Yep. Okay. Yep, I did. And then my mom sold it at a garage sale.
Oh, that's rough.
Yeah, it is.
All right, do we want to get into, like, spoiler stuff?
I mean, I've been dying to talk about spoiler stuff since you finished the game, so...
All right, let's do it.
All right,
everybody. Spoiler time.
I thought you were getting ready to leave.
I'm going to sit here and listen to the spoilers.
You don't have to.
No, I do.
You can go.
No, I don't. I can't. All right. I'm stuck.
All right.
All right, so let's just hit the ground running. In my opinion, this has one of the scariest moments from any Resident Evil game. Steven, your thoughts?
I don't know what you're talking about. I can't think of it.
The baby.
The doll?
The baby in the basement of the dollhouse.
I genuinely don't remember it. Maybe I was too tired.
The giant fetus that chases you through the dollhouse basement.
I was going to say, it doesn't sound that scary to me.
Oh, yeah. I was terrified.
I didn't find it scary, but really? I loved it as a bit of like weird, creepy, like out there creature design. It reminded me of a lot of Atlas games. They do like really weird, horrible creatures like that a lot. They did one in Catherine that was kind of similar.
Jeez, that's so I know what you're talking about.
After I beat the game, I went on to the Resident Evil subreddit to see what other people's thoughts were on that level, to see if I'm just a massive pussy. And no, like, the general consensus amongst Resident Evil fans is that's horrifying. Maybe that means that we're not exposed to real horror enough, but...
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I was definitely like, this is like insane and f***ed up and weird, but like, it was that kind of horror that like just puts a big grin on my face because I love how disturbing and f***ed up it is. Like, I wasn't scared. I was just like, this is f***ing awesome.
That's
like,
fair. And I guess to put it in full frame, I played that level at 2 a.m. with the lights off, headphones on, full experience. And yeah, I felt every hair on my body stand on end when you hear it like cooing for the first time.
It does. It calls out for like its dad, right?
Isn't well, yeah, because it's meant to be Ethan's child. It's meant to be a version of Rose.
Yeah.
What it is based on the concept art, they revealed that the baby was born from the Mia mannequin in that escape room level.
Okay.
And yeah, and did you didn't die to it, did you?
I don't think so, no.
I didn't either, but I went and looked up on YouTube after I beat that, what happens if you do die to it. It grabs you by the legs and has its fleshy little hands and giant open mouth just drags Ethan into its mouth and eats
him.
Oh
my god, that's amazing.
You get the game over screen as it says yummy. I'm gonna send a link.
Oh, that's genius. I love that. Yeah, see, that's like that to me is why horror is so great, because it's like you just get these bizarre out there things that you're never gonna see anywhere else. And like I don't know whether it's trying to be scary or weird or interesting. Like, that stuff always just clicks with me so much. I had the same reaction. Well, actually, I had a little bit of, like, the disturbed, but also the grin on my face of, like, oh my god, this is so f***ed up in 7 when you fight Marguerite.
Oh, yeah, Mama Gooch.
And you find out that she's birthing these bugs, and so you're fighting her, and she, like, after you beat her one time, she goes down on all fours, and her limbs, like, elongate, and she runs out of the room like a weird, like, four-legged spider. And then the next time you see her dress is all ridden up because her limbs and her torso are all elongated.
Yep.
And she's got, like, a hornet's nest in between her legs, and that's, like, the weak spot that you have to shoot.
Where she would be anatomically birthing these bugs from.
Just saw that and I couldn't stop laughing, and I was like, but not laughing like at it, just like I couldn't believe what I was seeing, and I was like, I have to tell everyone about this. It's amazing.
Like, was it like a Zelda game where it's like, oh, I don't know where to hit the boss, oh, maybe the giant glowing red eye?
It's not glowing, but you if you're able to stagger her, she stands on her legs, and you can see very clearly the spot that is intended to be hit.
Well, yeah, because I had that experience there, because she comes at me, and I shot her in the head, and nothing happened, and I shot her in the torso twice, and nothing happened, and I was like, well, there's got to be a weak point, I got to look, and then, like Jordan says, she rears back on her legs, and it's like, well, I guess that's it.
You know, that's my favorite thing about Resident Evil is when they're not being obnoxious with the amount of eyes these creatures have, they can get really creative with where their weak spots are.
Yeah, for sure. The creature design overall, we should get back to Village.
Yep.
There were a lot of cool creature designs in this. I liked their version of werewolves, which are just, well, lichens. They don't call them werewolves, but they're just kind of like feral humans that are like bigger, like, and
bigger,
hairy.
Hairier, have the teeth and the claws.
Yeah, like, yep. I loved how gruesome it was real early on. You get attacked by one, and Ethan gets like half of his left hand just straight bitten off.
I love that Capcom hid that. Like, even in the demo, he had two full hands.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay, because I only played the Maiden demo where you're not playing as Ethan.
Yeah, no, in the Village and Castle demos, Ethan had two full hands.
That's cool.
They hid that, and I was wondering if this is going to be like in 7 when you get your hand cut off and then it's stapled to your body for the rest of the game. But no, Ethan's just rocking 8 fingers for the rest of the game.
Yeah, it's like, and I love it's this like real imperfect cut on the fingers, and like it's just looks gnarly and gross. Yeah, like
it's such a cool looking scene. I wanted to include a screenshot of it, but I didn't want to like spoil that moment for people who would play it.
Yeah, that scene is great, and like I feel like I would feel that way about a lot of the monster design. Like I said, I like the lichens.
I loved the daughters, the vampire girls, not Lady Dimitrescu. I don't know how to pronounce her last name. Lady Vampire Mommy. I thought she
Vampire Mommy Donnie.
I thought she looked okay, but her daughters looked just so gross and perfect.
Yeah, they were great. And like when you let the cold air in and they turn into these like swarms of bugs, and their skin, like when they go back to human, like starts to turn white as they're freezing.
Yep. That was actually a moment. Maybe it was just the way the gameplay lined up for me, but that was a moment that I felt had some of the original charm of the campiness and the silliness. In I believe it was the second daughter, where you have the giant window above the room where you need to open the lever to fight her. She like spawned right on the platform underneath the window for me and was being all taunty, and I just popped the lever and she started screaming, cut her off. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that is funny. Yeah, and that is a good moment. Like, yeah, you're right. There are splashes of it throughout, but it wasn't as in your face as far as
the other one being Moreau screaming, "I'm the best."
Yeah, let's talk about Moreau, because people are making a huge deal about Tall Vampire Mommy Dummy, but Moreau is amazing. He should be the star. Like, he should be on the cover of this game. Eric, you will not have seen Moreau around, probably, but he's a weird, very wide hunchback dude, but his hunch is all made out of, like, these bulbous pores that are kind of, like, red, like a dark red and pulsating, and he vomits all the time, and he has a weird inferiority complex where he apparently is made fun of by all the other villains in the game, and he talks a lot about how like he's a freak and a screw up, and then he has these weird moments of triumph and like
well, did you see Mother Miranda's notes?
So that's like a self-insert character or
yeah, I hallucinated him. I dreamed about him between playing sessions. Sorry, what were you saying, Jordan?
Did you see in the level where you play as Chris and you find Miranda's hideout, did you see the notes on
brain it? Function incredibly low.
Yeah. Like, even his, quote, mother is, like, disgusted with him.
Yeah, and, like, all the other villains, you have to, like, get these items back from them. I mean, we're doing spoilers. I can say you have to get these, like, flasks that are part of your daughter back from them. And the other ones are these giant ordeals. Well, not the doll, I guess. But Moreau, you walk in, and it's sitting there, and he's staring at white noise on a TV, completely transfixed by it. And you just grab it.
Yeah, you
and,
get
like,
the flask immediately.
Yeah, and you could easily turn around and walk out, but Ethan can't help himself from taunting Moreau, and he throws a temper tantrum and, like, blows up his house. But, like, it's awesome. Like, he's just this, like, doofy moron. Oh, he's great.
See, I loved that level because it was just the constant, like, oh, you gotta go do this giant puzzle in the middle of the lake, and if you fall into the water, you're just dead.
Yeah.
So I loved that.
Or if you walk, you know, on a bridge at the wrong moment, this yep. huge fish comes by and eats you, like...
And then after you drain the lake, he just turns into another bullet sponge boss fight and is less impressive.
Yeah, that was a little lame.
Yeah, especially, after the anticlimax that is the Donna boss fight.
Yeah, all right. So let's talk about the dollhouse.
Okay, so remember how I said the baby was like one of the scariest things in the franchise to me?
Yep.
And then we go back upstairs and it's hide and seek, but spooky.
Yeah.
I was really, really hoping the baby would have come back for a boss fight. But no, they bring you upstairs and you just immediately deal with the most anticlimactic boss fight in the game.
Yeah, I'm actually struggling to remember right now, and I did it probably about 12 hours ago. So you go into the house. There are some cool puzzles you have to solve in there, because you go into this house and you get all your items stolen, and it's, like Jordan said, an escape room.
In the basement, when it's an escape room, it's really good. And then you go upstairs with the flask to try and leave, and Donna, the one who controls the dolls, she's like, I can't let you leave. And then the bride doll, her name's, I believe, Angie.
Yeah, I think.
She gets all, like, possessy and... like, oh, you gotta find me before my friends kill you. And it's, you gotta find her 3 times in the upstairs level of the house.
Yeah.
And it's not hard at all because she sticks out like a sore thumb.
Yeah, the last one, she's not even hiding. She's just sitting in the hallway.
Yep.
And so you find her 3 times and then you fight. I did like Ethan has a pair of scissors that every time he finds her, he just jabs into her skull.
Yep.
Just for the absurdity of him stabbing a doll to death out of anger and just like petulant, like, I don't know what's happening. I'm just going to destroy this doll and open
those works. Moments felt very like child's play to me.
Yeah.
But I was too distracted by how bored I was during that quote boss fight. Like, I wish they would have brought that baby back. Make me kill the weird f***ed up baby.
So is there a proper boss fight at the end of that doll house, or do you just find her 3 times and then
you
leave?
You find her 3 times, you stab her the last time, and then it's revealed you've been stabbing Donna the whole time.
Yeah.
And then you just f*** off.
Oh, cool.
Go off to hang out with Moreau in the swamp.
Yeah, at least they follow her up with a great boss.
That's true. That is
well,
true.
Well, again, it's not a great boss fight. Should we talk about the boss fights? How did you feel about... Are there any really good... I recently replayed the first Metal Gear Solid. I replayed that during the week in between doing 7 and Village. And that game's really well known for its boss fights.
Yep.
And maybe it's unfair because I just played like some of the most famous ones ever. But I can't... None of the boss fights are really standing out. Like you said, they're just a lot of... bullet sponges.
One stands out for how stupid it is, and it's the Heisenberg fight.
Yeah, I didn't mind that because at least it was a little different. At least you're in a tank. You're not just...
That's exactly how I felt because, you know, you fight Alcina and she turns into a giant vampire slug thing and she's just a bullet sponge. The Angie isn't even a fight.
Is Alcina the one that flies around? You got to shoot her off the tower.
Yes. Yeah, so and it's very boring.
Yeah, because it's not. At first, I was like, okay, this is different, but like, she's not that hard to hit, really. I don't think you even have to use the sniper rifle.
No, I didn't. And then the dollhouse, boring. Moreau, after you drain the lake, boring. I actually that section took me slightly longer because I almost thought it was going to be like Del Lago where I had to shoot him when he came up.
Oh yeah, you were trying to shoot him. You were still trying to do him in the water.
Yeah, and then after like 5 minutes of wasting bullets and that not working, I pushed on, and that's when I realized, oh no, this is a puzzle. Like, I have to do the puzzle while he chases me. It's not like the Resident Evil 4 Del Lago fight.
There is a moment I like in that fight after you drain the water where Moreau slumps out of the water and he just looks sad and walks away from you.
Yep.
And then I think he comes back later and then you fight him, but that made me laugh too.
Yeah.
Like, Moreau is so fun.
And then, yeah, the Heisenberg fight was different and I liked it for that reason.
Yeah.
And then the final battle against Mother Miranda, you know, to their credit, at least there's a boss fight. The boss fight against Evelyn at the end of 7 wasn't really much of a boss either.
No, but I liked that because it was very graphically impressive and it felt like it fit the tone of that game where this tension had been building all throughout, and all of a sudden, like, that's the one moment really where they let loose and like just hits the fan.
Yes.
And like, even though it wasn't challenging on a gameplay level, I was like, holy this is cool, this is scary, I'm freaking out.
Yes.
Mother Miranda, yeah, like you said, like, I started fighting her, and, like, it felt like, okay, so I just shoot her, there's no trick, there's no puzzle, there's no...
To her credit, at least she doesn't have a giant eye growing out of her shoulder or something.
Yeah, that's true.
shout out to Krauser. But yeah, no, the boss fight's very underwhelming in an otherwise really solid gameplay game. I loved that that Heisenberg called Chris that boulder punching asshole.
That was great. Yeah, that was pretty funny. Which, like, it's one of those lines that I love because it makes no sense. Like, how would Heisenberg know about that? But
no one should know about that. They were in a volcano in the middle of Africa.
I love in, I think it's Marvel vs. Capcom 3 or Infinite or one of them. If you're playing as Hulk and Chris jumps into the fight, he'll call him Boulder Puncher. Or no, it's if you're playing as Hulk and you call in Chris to replace you, he'll like call people out as they switch in and out, and he calls Chris Boulder Puncher.
You know, I appreciate that Capcom just goes all in when their fans hitch to something like that.
Yeah, it's great.
I had thoughts on one thing and I completely forgot what it was. So if you had
before we move on from Heisenberg, yeah. I want to talk about, he was also a really fun villain.
Yes.
Because he has this weird way of speak. He kind of sounds like he's doing like an Elvis impression. If Elvis like was, I don't know, like James Gum from yep. Silence of the Lambs. Like,
shut your fucking hole. Sorry about that. Listen, Ethan, you're being played. Lady, supersized bitch. Ugly ass psycho doll. An Moronic freak. Don't you get it? It's a test. To see if you're strong enough to be a part of Miranda's family.
No, but he's really fun. Like, he just... He has this weird charisma to him. He's interesting and weird. Like, I loved a lot of the... Even though you said it was a very cinematic game, and I don't disagree, but that feels like it bookends it. In the middle, it was kind of tight. There's not a lot of cutscenes.
Yes.
It does not bog you down with dialogue, and what dialogue there is, I thought was usually interesting or weird enough. Like, again, Moreau is just so out there that I loved it. Heisenberg is probably the only one whose story I found kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I liked that Heisenberg actually wanted Ethan to help him.
Yeah, and he felt like a sympathetic villain.
Yep.
Like,
talking about the performance, so he's played by Neil Newbin, who also voiced a character named Asterion in Baldur's Gate 3, who is this super flamboyant vampire. And just, I've decided that this guy's my new favorite video game voice actor, because Asterion is just a delight when you have him in the party in Baldur's Gate 3. And like you said, Heisenberg is just the best villain in the game. And I'm kind of glad they focused on Alcina for all the marketing so that they could keep this sleeper agent of Heisenberg for the actual game.
Yeah, for sure. Because I didn't mind Alcina. There's nothing wrong with her. Donna's really the only one that never gets any development or personality or anything interesting. Yep. But like Alcina, she wouldn't stand out if it wasn't for the marketing, I don't think.
No. No, not at all. And for the internet's obsession with her, that's led Capcom to selling 9-foot-tall bath towels.
I forgot about that. Too bad that didn't come with your review copy.
I'm okay that it didn't come with my review copy. That would have ended up in the dumpster.
It's a little annoying that the vanilla version of the game doesn't actually have the fly swatter that you could spank her with. They had to mod that in. It's like, that's... Come on, Capcom. I guess you're not capitalizing on everything.
Yeah, stupid Crapcom.
So they had Alcina stalking you through the castle at one point, very much like Jack in the Baker House or Mr. X in the police station in Resident Evil 2. I felt like she was the least effective.
Well, forgetting Nemesis again.
Yep.
Nemesis yet again. As well. You thought Mercenaries started in 4, started in... Oh, God.
Okay, in my defense, fan. I knew deep down... that Nemesis is the one that started Mercenaries, but it has been so long since I played base Resident Evil 3 Nemesis that I just...
Yeah.
I forgot. I'm human. But yes, very very much like Nemesis, very much like Mr. X, very much like Jack. I feel like she's the least effective stalker character. I wasn't really ever afraid of running into her.
No, me neither. She would show up every now and then, and I'd usually just run past her, I think. Or, like, I think one time she cornered me, and I just kind of tanked a few hits and managed to slip past. Yeah. But,
you know, even with her giant 9-inch nails, if you block, you're fine. And she's 9 feet tall, so you can pretty easily slip past her while she's winding up to attack.
Yeah, exactly. And, I mean, for all I know, that may be the case with Jack as well, or Nemesis or Mr. X, but I was legitimately scared of Jack when I saw him coming. I was like, oh,
yep, I was
God,
legitimately
I gotta go the
scared
other,
of
like,
Jack. I was legitimately scared of Nemesis. Resident Evil 2 Remake specifically had me actually terrified of Mr. X because of how tight quarters the police station is.
Yeah.
So that had me, like, actually scared. But the castle's just too open. Like, you can easily avoid Alcina.
Yeah, that. Yeah, you're right. That is another good point. The castle's wide open. And where they redid the map system, so it's a lot more accurate and gives a lot more information, and they did that because of the treasure hunting aspects, mm-hmm. but it also makes it easier to see, like, okay, well, she's here. Even if she does block you, which, like you said, she rarely does, I would always just pull up my map immediately and be like, okay, well, if I turn around, go around that corner, okay, there you go, I can get past her that way. Like, yep. If I couldn't just directly slip past her.
And if you're in the ballroom and she's coming down the stairs, you just go into the merchant's room and she can't touch you.
Yeah, I exploited that a few times. Yeah, I would just run into the merchant's room and everything was cool. Like,
yeah, I always loved that about Resident Evil, how there's just safe rooms in these people's lairs that you can walk in and scream bass.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that I really do love that map system, but I do think that, and like the whole thing with Alcina, again, I know I keep going back to this, but that just epitomizes to me why this game, I never felt like it was trying to be scary, because the way they redid the map system to emphasize treasure and hunting, yep. and everything, it makes it so when you're playing, you're not thinking about, like, holy shit, like, who's that around that corner? What was that noise? What's going to happen? What right. weird, creepy monster am I going to see next? You're thinking, like, God, that room is still red. Oh, I couldn't find that there. Oh, look, there's a treasure over here. Oh, my God, I found this key. Where was the door for that? And you go back. Like, it just completely changes the way you think about the game and the way you play it.
No, definitely.
I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just one of those things. Yeah. The other thing we didn't talk about yet is the Duke.
Oh, the Duke. What can be said about the Duke? You like the Duke. You tell me what you think about the Duke.
Well, you don't like the Duke.
I don't dislike him.
Oh.
But
I'll say this. He's no merchant.
No, he is not.
Not by a long shot.
Even though he quotes him.
Or anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, in Resident Evil 4, there's a random dude that shows up, and as far as I remember, they don't ever make any effort to explain who he is or why he's there, and he never gets involved in the story. He's literally just a dude in a blue coat that goes, "What are you buying? Oh, hey, stranger." And he, like, pulls open his giant trench coat like a pervert and shows you all of his guns, and you buy stuff from him, and then you run away, and, like, you never, that's it. The Duke, by comparison, I like his design. He's, like, this, like, I don't know, probably he's also 10 feet tall and, you know, probably 400 pounds overweight, and he rides around in a caravan and he sells you stuff, and it, like, his design is weird. He has this, like, real gross belly that hangs out under his shirt, like, or hangs out, like, over his shirt, and, like, it looks all, like, crinkly, and, like, something about his belly, like, the fat, like, folds in on each other as if he's had his stomach stapled and then he broke the staples three times, like,
This boy is thick.
Oh my goodness, big time.
The popular theory amongst fans for the merchant is that there's multiple merchants, and that's why no matter where you go, you can always run into at least one. That's not the case with the Duke.
No, well, he has a giant caravan, because you do ride, well, we'll get to that, but he has a very different demeanor where, like, the merchant had this weird, creepy voice, and he kind of sits back and he's like, it's like he's just bemused by the whole thing. He'll just see you and be like, oh, hey, stranger, like, or no, it actually, wait, I'm going to take that back. It's as if he doesn't know what's going on. It's as if he's just selling his stuff on the street corner and happens to run into Leon a few times and is unaware of anything else happening. And it's just like, oh, you got a nice jewel there, stranger. Like, that's all that's his whole universe.
Well, the interesting thing is that they used the assets for a Ganado for the merchant and then just covered him with all the coat and the scarf and stuff. Yeah, in the, I think it's in the castle level of Resident Evil 4, his eyes glow the same as the Ganado's do. So, by lore, he's infected, but he retains all of his free will unless his specific strain of Las Plagas was to make him sell things.
I think that it's just his will to sell, yeah. That makes
him, from the technical, realistic standpoint, they just reused the assets. That's very clear.
But, yeah, that's what happened.
But, of course, we got to put lore into it. Speaking of putting lore into it, that's why I don't like the Duke.
Oh, hold on, wait. I just wanted to quickly say about the Duke. in comparison to his demeanor, he sits back and he like comments on Ethan's story. And like, there is something I kind of like where like he kind of shames you. Like if you sell items that are not worth very much, like you sell like one box of bullets, he'll be like, falling on hard times, eh, Ethan? Or like, or like when you leave him, he'll sometimes give this very like almost sarcastic, or he'll be like, oh, have a wonderful adventure. Like,
yeah, when you sell him the cheaper gems, he's like, you know, I'm doing this because we're friends, right?
Yeah, exactly. I do kind of like that stuff, but...
Yeah, the Duke has likable qualities. What I don't like is that they made him this, like, lore keeper for the story and then never explained it.
Yeah. Even if he was just an exposition dump at one point, that would be all right, because I guess it would be hard. I mean, I don't know. I don't really like it either. But then he gets involved in the story at one point. He basically saves Ethan at one point.
Do we talk about that?
We might as well. We've talked about everything else.
So yeah, Ethan's been dead since the opening of Resident Evil 7 when Jack punched him in the face.
Yeah.
Jack punches him in the face, he falls to the ground and then stomps your head and you die right there.
Which I like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it was a good callback. It was a moment that I kind of subconsciously forgot about. And then you run into Evelyn after Miranda tears your heart out. You're like in some sort of limbo that must exist for the molded. Oh no, I believe that's supposed to be a representation of the hive mind that is the mold. You have memories of everyone who's connected in the mold when you're infected like that.
Oh, that makes sense.
And that's why
at
the end of 7 you see Jack and Zoe, depending on the ending you choose.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's what that was supposed to be, was just another physical manifestation of that, where Evelyn's like, yeah, dude, you've been dead for 3 years. You're literally just mold.
Which raises all kinds of questions about Rose's conception.
And that's actually why Rose is, lore-wise, supposed to be more powerful than Evelyn, because Ethan is pure mold, and Mia... So it's left kind of... It's not really well explained. Mia was at one point infected, but I think the infection, like, just sort of faded after Evelyn died. At least I think that's what was supposed to happen.
Yeah, I think.
So either she was previously infected or still a little infected, and then they conceived Rose, and now she's, like, what Evelyn was supposed to be.
Yeah.
Which is interesting, because they never touch on this, but Evelyn always looked like a younger version of Mia, so I always wondered if... they got her by, like, Mia donating an egg.
Yeah, that's interesting. I never thought about that, but yeah, I can see it.
So yeah, I don't know if that's a bigger reveal than what you find in Miranda's hideaway or not.
The Oswald Spencer thing? Yeah, that's the other thing I was going to ask you about. How do you feel about lore going back to, like, 1996 being, not altered, but being tied back into, like, because doesn't he give her credit for, like, inspiring him to start Umbrella or something?
Yes, what it was is, so the Spencers have their roots in Europe, so he just kind of stumbled into the village at one point. I believe he was on, like, a hiking expedition and found it, and Miranda taught him her ways, and he in the note says, like, hey, you're mold, it's great, but you're trying to bring one person back from the dead and I'm trying to change the human race. So I think a virus is what I need, not your mold.
Oh, okay. I thought he was saying, I'm not super into the lore of the series, so I didn't skim it, but I just gave it one read and was like, oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
I thought he said he used the mold as a base for the virus or something,
but
he didn't.
It inspired him to get Umbrella Pharmaceuticals, later to become Umbrella Corporation, to make the T-virus what it was.
Gotcha. Okay, that is cool then. Yep. That is an interesting
Basically,
note.
It proved to him that something similar to what he was trying to do was possible.
Okay.
And, you know, I think it's obviously... not something that they intended when Resident Evil 1 came out.
No, but it's still a cool callback.
It's a cool callback. I think it doesn't really change anything because it's something that happened in the lore long before we even touched the series.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really change anything. I'm okay with it. It left me speechless when I got to the end of the letter and read signed Oswell E. Spencer.
Yeah, as I was reading it, like, I was kind of like, okay, this is going to be someone important, but I couldn't quite place who it was going to be.
Right. I was almost wondering if it wasn't going to be Wesker, and this is how he learned of Las Plagas, because some of the enemies, like, especially Moreau, kind of feel very similar to Las Plagas.
Yeah, is it Moreau that, or God, who is it? I know it's that big dude with the hammer that you call the like airstrikes in on, but he has these tentacles that come out of his back that look a lot like the Las Plagas.
Yep, and then when Moreau is shapeshifting into his giant fish form, he has the kind of tenderly stuff coming out of him like the Las Plagas do when you cap a Ganado's head off and it just explodes and the bug comes out.
I don't feel like these are real words that you guys are saying right
They're
now.
They're absolutely real words.
Eric, just listen to yourself when you talk about Kingdom Hearts.
All right, fair.
We have not said the phrase birth by sleep at any point today, so...
And before we get away from it, too, when you're stabbing the doll, Angie, she's got some tenderly stuff coming out, too, that almost looks like the Plagas.
Oh, okay, cool.
So part of me was thinking, oh, is this going to be Wesker, and this is, and like there's the mold is connected to Plagas somehow, but nope, they went even further back before Wesker was even conceived.
So where do you think Resident Evil goes from here? Not necessarily from a plot standpoint, but from a gameplay perspective, where they sort of, 7, they reinvented it again from, you know, they built a new perspective, they changed the gameplay, but they returned to the roots in terms of atmosphere and story, and now Village retains the gameplay of 7, it retains the perspective, I guess, of 7, but it goes back to the atmosphere and the general tone and gameplay style of 4, which is the second time the series reinvented itself. So where do you think they go from here? Do they try to do something totally new? Do they stick with what worked in Village? Do you think they go back being creepy? Like,
I actually think this is going to be very similar to what we got with Resident Evil 4 to 5 to 6, where 6 was just like a pure action game.
Yeah.
Whether through DLC or Resident Evil 9, I think we're going to get a Chris Redfield centered first person shooter.
I would like that a lot. We've gotten two short ones. There's a sequence near the end of this and there was not a hero. Yeah. So I would like to see that a lot. That would be pretty cool.
Because at the end of Village, it's revealed that the Bioterrorism Security Assessment Alliance, the BSAA, the organization that Chris used to work for from Resident Evil 5 onward, but doesn't work for them anymore in Village, they were using BOWs to attack Miranda.
Yeah.
And Chris isn't having that, so the game kind of like ends with Chris being like, oh, let's head to BSAA's Europe headquarters. So whether it's through DLC or a Resident Evil 9, I think we're getting another Chris Redfield first-person shooter, and then eventually we'll likely get more of Rose because of that post-credit scene.
Yeah, well, that would have to take place far in the future, though, because she's grown up.
Maybe. They were able to speed up Evelyn's growth rate, so... But that's why she became a grandma at the end of 7.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that. Yeah,
so it's a question of, is she just a normal person, or is she going to grow up to be usable very quickly and then stop and grow at a normal rate, you know?
No, you're right. That makes sense.
Yeah, we don't know enough about Rose to know what's going to happen with that. The other thing, too, is not counting Code Veronica or Zero, Resident Evil 1, 2, and 3 Nemesis were all the fixed camera angles, tank controls, and then in 4 they reinvented it to the third-person shooter for 4, 5, 6, and then 7 reinvented it again. They go in trilogies
in threes.
For these gameplay changes. So I think we're getting one more first-person shooter, and then they'll change it up again to something.
Match 3 puzzle game.
It's actually going to be a real-time strategy game.
Ooh, dude, I would be so in for that, though. You're caught, you're like commanding a giant squad of BSAA soldiers. Ooh.
Guys, hear me out. Resident Evil on the run. What if they started making Resident Evil movies? Ugh.
Whoa.
Could you imagine?
That would be crazy. The only thing, your pitch for Resident Evil 9, it does seem like with 7 and 8, they've been making the series more accessible, because there isn't a ton of overt tying into the series lore, and like 7, you could definitely play without playing any of the others. 8, you could probably get away without playing 7, like even without the little intro they have at the beginning, you don't really need to know a lot. So something as deep into, like, as inside baseball as, like, you're assaulting BSAA headquarters might be, I don't know, I'm not sure if that's the way they would go with it, but it also, I mean, but if you look at 5 and 6, they also went pretty deep into the lore, I think, right?
Yeah.
So it's something they've done before.
They touch on the deep lore, especially in 5, going all the way back to the Wesker project.
Yeah, I could definitely see them doing the Chris Redfield first person shooter, but I think it would be more like he gets caught in a situation and has to work through, I don't know, another mansion or whatever, and like, you know, maybe he gets trapped in the BSAA headquarters and that acts as the spooky area that you're trapped in for the whole game, and then near the end he, you know, confronts whatever's happening, right? Like,
right.
I'm not sure if the whole thing would tie into the lore, but it would be cool if they did. I don't know.
Really just not enough info to say for certain right now. Just can really only speculate. Yeah. We know for sure we're getting Chris Redfield f***ing up the BSAA. It's just a matter of, is that going to be another Not a Hero style DLC, or is that going to be Resident Evil 9?
Yeah. All right. I think before we go, was there any like comments or criticism on your review that you wanted to address? Do you think you need to?
No, not really. I welcome the open discussion. I'm glad that people felt inspired to comment. And that's the thing. I try to only respond to certain comments on reviews because I don't want it to feel like I'm arguing in the comments, just because everything's so opinion-based that I don't want it to feel like someone thinks like, oh, I disagreed with this asshole, so now he's fighting with me because he thinks I'm wrong. I'm an adult. I can just silently disagree and move on.
So yeah, it's always important to comment. It's also important to subscribe. And in this case where we're talking about, this is the Werewolf Podcast, it's always important to subscribe to the podcast.
How long were you waiting to drop that?
Ever since you first said the word lichen, which was probably about 40 minutes ago, I'm like, hey, I know how to close out the podcast now.
All right.
Be sure to like and subscribe.
I feel like you have the phrase like and subscribe scratched into your desk with your fingernails like you've just been. You look like Kevin Spacey in like Seven.
Yeah, be sure to punch that boulder, I mean that bell icon.
Oh goodness.
Jill Sandwich.
All right, bye everyone.
All right, bye.
Bye.